Yacht rock is a
Yeah.
term actually invented in what, 2005, by some people who made a YouTube video of all these 1970s smooth rock artists,
Yep.
like Doobie Brothers and Steely Dan and stuff. But it reminds me of that, where like these people back in the 70s, these great artists made some music, and then it sort of just like went away, and it
Yeah.
was only rediscovered as a satire.
Our VP of engineering listens to it all the time. He's like, that's his favorite Spotify playlist.
Oh my God. That's vibe coding for sure.
That's a vibe coder right there.
But it reminds me of the trends that you see, where something is just like, it's, because I remember growing up on these kind of these songs. I mean, I'm old. I mean, I remember when like
Yeah.
these were new albums, actually. Like
Yeah,
record, I
it's made
still
a
have some
comeback.
probably over there, actually. But it was like these were like new albums, and now they were uncool for decades, and they resurrected.
Yeah.
But this is like what you see with trends. Data governance is pretty much like yacht rock in a lot of ways,
Yeah.
where this was hits that your dad listened to, when he's probably, having a doobie or something, and now it's cool.
Yeah.
Now your kids listen to it. Your VP of engineering listens to it. It's so this is how it is.
I'm Armand Petrosian, the CEO of Coalesce, and this is The Data Tea, our monthly podcast on the news, trends, and technology transforming data today.
Awesome. Let's get started.
Let's
I think
do this.
it's been a few years, actually, since we had you on. I want to say, like, we first had you on when we just came out of stealth. So I'm
Yeah,
really excited.
right?
I'm really excited to have you back,
Thank you.
man. Thanks for coming.
See, reunion tour.
That's right. That's right. For anybody that's tuning in, feel free to let us know where you're listening in from. It's always nice to see the international crowd, but a man that needs no introduction, Joe Reese.
How you doing?
Welcome. Couldn't be happier to have you here.
Likewise, good to see you, man. So it's like it's been a while. Miss you. Let's
Yeah.
let's chat about
Let's
whatever.
chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this can go in many different directions. People may not even know what they signed up for. So it could go data, it could go MMA, it could go DJing, but maybe we should start with data and
Yeah.
start with your life as well, because I feel like you have been quite the globetrotter over the past couple years since we last had you on.
Yeah.
What have you been up to lately? Like, where has Joe Reese been?
Well, I'm currently in Salt Lake City, where I live. But where was I? I was most recently over in Europe, which is where I go a lot, actually.
Yeah.
This time around, Germany and Austria. So I was there for a winter data conference with our mutual friend, Chris Tab and Leet Data. We were actually some friends of from Coalesce as well there.
That's right.
Someone for dinner, so it was great.
I
Great
may have
time.
got some drunk photos that night while you were out there.
Might have happened. You can blackmail me later. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think a lot of trips like that, right? So just a lot of traveling here and there. The last few years have been nuts. I think you've taken off with Coalesce. I took off for other reasons, and I almost spend more time overseas than actually in the States. But I think,
What's that? What's that been like? So I know the Winter Data Conference, really great community building event. Like, you have had your book published now for maybe a couple years at this point.
About two
And
and a
so
half
is
years,
it
yeah.
2.5 years. Congrats on that. Still such a popular book. I think it's probably the most comprehensive data engineering book, period.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. I mean that. I don't think there's much other content that's as on point. And so, when you're out on the road, is it mostly in regards to evangelizing the book? Is it, are you just like talking about new data trends? What's it like?
More, I
day
think
in the
more
life?
Of the latter, really. It's kind of like these days. I mean, I think I'm the kind of guy where after something's been done and published, I kind of move on mentally from it. Like I think I spent maybe only 6 months, I think, talking specifically about the fundamentals of data engineering book. And then, I've been talking about other topics. I think the one I've been talking about the most has been data modeling, actually, which we can talk more about. But I think
that's how we met.
That was how we met.
That was our hot topic when we first
It
met.
was.
Prior
It
to
was.
having you on, we were like, oh, you actually care about this stuff.
Yeah, which is kind of weird
it wasn't
back
being
then.
Talked about at all back
No,
then.
you guys were, obviously have a tool that works in this area, and then You know, but I right after Fundamentals came out, I started toying with the idea of writing a book on data modeling. And so that's pretty much what I've been working on since that, plus just traveling and giving talks and, you know, made a course with deep learning AI and Andrew Ng, and it's on Coursera. So that was a lot of fun. But that was on data engineering, I guess. And then, yeah, just been traveling the world talking about data modeling for the most part. You know, and that's been interesting to see the evolution of that conversation, where I think when we first started talking about it, people were definitely scratching their heads, like, why of any topic would you pick this one to talk about? It's definitely, you know, definitely kind of as a old man screaming at the sky kind of topic. But
yeah,
you know, you fast forward to today, and it's become definitely like a few other things in our industry. What's old is new again. The pendulum has definitely swung back to
the
fundamentals, and data modeling being one of the fundamentals. And so the topic, I would say, is more relevant than ever. I can't take full credit for pushing it. I think there's, you know, people like yourself have been also doing, you know, the Lord's work in this area, and you know, a few others. But it definitely was a cold start problem for a bit, where data modeling was definitely not the topic that it is today. I still think there's a long ways to go, but it's
definitely
more prevalent than it was, which was basically actually.
Is that book on the way out? Is it?
I'm hoping to get it done this summer and published. Yeah, like, so I'm publishing early drafts over on Substack, and so that's been good to write a book in public and get feedback on that. But I think at the rate I'm going, it should be published this summer sometime. So that'll be nice. God, Lord knows, I'm sure you're the same way. You got a lot of things you want to get done, but there's always like that one thing in front of you where,
for sure,
you know, you kind of got to get this thing out of the way.
That's the one thing for you right now is the data modeling.
The book, yeah. But I mean, it kind of, you know, set the stage for a lot of other things I'm working on, but it's just that one thing where it's like the hardest thing you have to do, and it's just constantly, you know, in front. But yeah, like I said, everyone has this in their life, right?
Yes.
Everyone has their crucible, so to speak. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
But well, it's a very relevant one. It's interesting. You know, when we first had you on, whatever it was, 2.5-3 years ago, and we were talking about this topic, I think at that point, most people were feeling the pain of not having good data modeling best practices. And then now it's becoming more of a trend. Like, I know you're starting to hear when we're in the field talking to companies, like they have this old medallion architecture, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, that seems like not the be all end all, or probably not the right destination, but at least it's a step closer to having some type of data modeling best practices.
Well, that's interesting, right? Yeah, because the medallion architecture, I don't think that's data modeling per se, but it certainly sets the guardrails in the workflow. Exactly. Where if you're thinking about medallion, then implicitly you're thinking about, okay, so how am I going to, you know, take, you know, basically raw data, so to speak, and convert that into something that's usable for analytics in a sequential fashion, right?
Yep.
So I think that it's seeing that more and more. I run a Discord group, and you know, medallion keeps popping up as one of the topics people talk about. I see that on LinkedIn as well, and other social media platforms. It's funny because medallion's been around for a bit, right? I mean, since late 2010s, early 2020s. But yeah, but like a lot of things, it takes a bit for, I think, it's just the crossing the chasm, as it classically is, where, you know, early adopters aren't the same thing as the late majority. And so it takes time. It takes time, but it takes, I think, evangelism of practices. And eventually, when enough people hear about it, especially from their friends and peers, and suddenly what's, you know, was unknown becomes known and important. And so that's cool.
Yeah.
What are you seeing, though, in terms of conversations around data modeling? I mean, you're out there in the field a lot. I actually met you when you were, before you were at Coalesce, you were selling another product, and
that's right.
And we're talking about, and I think data modeling was one of the emphasis of that thing, but what, you know, so you've been talking about this for a while, I suppose, is what I'm trying to set you up for, with clients and stuff, but what are you seeing these days?
You know, so when we met, I remember you clearly mentioning that there hadn't really been much innovation on data modeling, like 2.5-3 years ago, you're like, there was Ralph Kimball, Inman, Star Schema, Thermoform, Data Vault 2.0 was the most recent innovation, let's call it. And there wasn't really anything since then. I would say the concept of a data mesh, I don't know if you would consider that data modeling, but like that became a pretty big topic. And we do see a lot of companies talking about wanting to implement a data mesh. I think medallion architecture to me is just like, you've got stages similar to like a star schema. You've got stages in between getting it to the actual dimensional model where you can publish it. Like, it's not that crazy to like a medallion architecture really isn't that innovative. I think it's just a simple way to describe, we're going to take raw data, get it to the point that it's consumable and have some different partitions sequentially along the process. Right. Data mesh is, it's a really great concept. I think a lot of like C-suite executives, you know, CIOs, CDOs, they really want to democratize the implementation across the enterprise. And they seem to be using that term more frequently than anything else that I'm seeing.
So interesting. Right now.
I don't know what you're seeing, if you've heard any other different approaches. And it really, I mean, there hasn't really been anything else that I've seen people latch onto, but I'd be curious.
Yeah, I mean, one big table by default has sort of been, I think, the at least for the you know, sort of the newer crop of data practitioners, that's been one of the models, I guess, so to speak. So there's a couple classes, really. I guess one big table, then there's just a bunch of tables.
Yeah,
and then there's something I quipped about on Ben Rogerson's show, which I called query-driven modeling, which could manifest itself either on schema on read or simply just random SQL scripts that you have floating around in your junk pile of a GitHub repo. And and that's, you know, those, but the former two, the just a bunch of tables and the query-driven modeling, it's more representative of kind of ad hoc data modeling, which is, I think, to be fair, very common, actually.
It is. Super common. I think that's why data modeling is becoming a lot more desirable, is because people feel the pain points of certain things like a one big table or whatever.
A billion tables
without any structure.
One billion tables.
One big table.
One bajillion tables. I think I called it WTF as well, like wide, tall, and full as a way of describing one big table. But this is sort of the default. And I think part of this goes back to this notion that joins are bad. So let's avoid them. But I think this comes at a cost, really. I mean, the approach I'm taking with my book is I don't really care what you do. I'm just telling you different techniques and you can choose what you want to do. You should be aware of the risks, but your fate is in your hands, as they say. And so one big table is certainly convenient, but I think it also puts the onus on the person modeling that table to really understand what it is, and also the, you know, the potential for duplication and all these other things in your data sets, as I'm sure you see. And it's you know, everything has trade-offs, but it goes back to this notion again that joins are bad. And because big tech companies have databases where they don't do joins, obviously with our, you know, small medium-sized company, you know, we obviously have the same problems, or, you know, we're at such a scale where we don't need to, you know, we can't do joins. I'm joking. Most companies aren't. Most companies would be just fine using a star schema or data vault or both for their analytics. And that's just kind of the reality of it. So, but yeah, it is interesting. And what I think is also interesting are the geographic and cultural patterns that I see with modeling and architecture as well. Like, Europe is a different beast than the United States, 100%. And even different pockets of Europe are different, right? So you go to certain areas where data vaults really, really hot, like, you know,
Finland,
Denmark.
Germany used to be super big. Yeah, Denmark. Yeah.
Bavaria, it's still big in Bavaria. Yeah.
Yeah, they're crazy. Still very big there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But then you come to the States, and I think it's starting to get some more traction here. But, you know, so it's interesting then, you know, just different types of companies have different ways of doing stuff. So I don't know what blogs everybody reads these days, where they get their sort of their knowledge pockets, but it is fascinating to watch.
It is. Yeah. It's interesting how like each subculture has different trends with data. And I've always found that something that's fascinating based on different geographies, like certain things take off, or you've got a more technical audience in certain countries compared to others. You've got sometimes more academic approaches you see in Europe, whereas you've got maybe more pragmatic approaches in other areas, depending on the region. And so I actually was going to ask you about this. Given you've been globetrotting, you've been experiencing tons of different data cultures, if you will. One thing that you've talked a lot about is the importance of communities and like non-vendor focused communities, just like general data communities. We saw this with things like Ethan Aaron's meetups. You know, I think you
Happy
posted,
hours.
happy hours. Like what do you envision? Because you know you're very active within the community to create a successful and useful community when it comes to data in general.
I mean, it's interesting because I'm going through this right now with this Discord community. I just started in the last like month and a half ish or
Okay.
something like that.
I'm
So
gonna
it's
have
called
to
Practical
grab
Data.
those.
It's on Discord, but
Okay.
it's been an interesting exercise. So I had a Substack community where people would chat. I didn't think that Substack's chat was that great for community stuff. I mean, people were chiming in on stuff, and I think it was good at controlling sort of the conversation, at least like metering it, because it's not a true chat. But to back up, I also started two communities on Substack, right? So the one's for my own Substack, the other's for Practical Data Modeling, which is the book I have coming out. So that's
Love that.
And so because I figured let's try something different. Let's actually build a community around the idea
Yeah.
of a book. And then, you know, and so these communities overlap. But at some point I was like, well, why don't we try Discord and maybe just get people, you know, into a place where they can just chat. And so that's been fascinating. Because you have people from all over the world talking about topics like data architecture, data modeling, but then they wanted to talk about politics. And I'm like, fine, we'll do a politics channel, right?
Okay.
I'm like, you're all adults, so
Wow.
let's. I mean,
Yeah.
kind of a, you know, potentially bold move, but you know, then I have like a channel about just post all the unhinged stuff in there, and then you realize like every channel ends up just be, you know, having entropy down to unhinged at some point. They're just in different
Yeah.
ways. But then people like sports. And so I started the new sports forum in this Discord, and that's really popular. So, you know, there's one on parenting and celebrating career accomplishments. What I realized is communities, you know, we can talk about the stuff we want to talk about with our profession.
Yeah.
But communities, I think, you know, you'll see this in in-person communities as well, like meetups. People just want to catch up on, you know, just life
Yeah.
in general. And this is also an important part
Definitely.
of the aspect communities, which I realize you can't ignore this. And so I've really, really leaned into providing, I think, a space for people just to talk about whatever they want, really. In
Yeah.
politics, I just had the rule, like, just be respectful. Like, you know, if you're going to debate, have a respectful debate. You know, and I'm sort of the benevolent dictator of everything. If I see something I don't like, I will tell you. And if not, I will make you leave.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that is. But it's been awesome. Like I was a bit concerned
Yeah.
at first how this would go. And I just now I check in maybe once a day. It looks great. Cool. But that I think is sort of where communities are going, is this hybrid of people, you know, meeting online and then meeting offline, maybe at things like a
Right.
low-key happy hour or so forth. But like this is sort of I think with respect to the data communities, this is sort of the underlying way everything works. We have a communities on LinkedIn,
Yep.
right? And there's sort of this implicit tribe of data people on LinkedIn when they talk. Then there might be other places they can go off of LinkedIn to talk, like Discord or other communities where they, you know, they're just topics where you don't want to talk about them on LinkedIn for every reason in the world,
Right.
right? The other reason I did Discord, which is just actually counter to my philosophy, I thought that maybe everyone needs to use a real name, but I'm like, well, maybe there are certain things where people shouldn't actually, right? And
It's like
maybe if
Reddit,
you,
anonymous, a little bit more anonymized.
And I feel as long as the decorum is there and you're not going completely, you know, in full offense mode, let's try that out, right? But the whole thing is experimenting with communities right now, I think, is more important than ever. And something that's really given me pause, part of the reason I started a publishing company, you know, for my book and for other people, was because I feel like people are going to want more and more human connections, more genuine types of
Definitely.
communities, especially in the face of AI everywhere. Increasingly, even on LinkedIn, there's so much AI generated content. I think people are
Spam.
gravitating towards something else. Yeah, it's ridiculous right
It's
now.
crazy. It's
Yeah.
crazy.
It's only
Yeah.
going to get worse. So, you know, but
It
let's find
will.
ways to give people what they want, which is
I
connecting.
love the Discord concept. I feel like there was a point in time where Twitter was super active for data, and then after Elon Musk acquired it, a ton of people dispersed and tried to go in different directions, but none of them really caught on yet.
No.
Like Reddit
Huh.
serves its purpose, but something in real time, you know, similar to like I think you were heavily involved in like the Locally Optimistic Slack channel, if I
I
remember
was there for a
correctly.
bit. Yeah, I was there for
Yeah.
a bit.
But that's like, it seems like there's some good momentum to go through a Discord experiment, and it sounds like it's working. So I'm going to need to
yeah, join it. Like, you do lunch and learns and stuff. You can hop on and do that. But it's like, but I think it's a fun way of just, I think, just cultivating a community where people can just have real conversations. I think that there's other communities like some you described where, you know, it's good, but you know, it's, you know, maybe it's not something that everyone wants. Right. And so, yeah. You know, if you like that, you know, if you like, there's plenty of communities online, you can join a bunch. You know, this sure. just happens to be one that there's a bunch of people on and they like it, but, no, but this stems back from, I used to you know, host meetups. I've been hosting meetups for a long, long time. Geez, since 2010, I think 2009 or 2010 is my first one. But, you know, co-founded the early Salt Lake City Python group, and that took off. And then in 2017, co-founded the Utah Data Engineering Meetup, which is still going to this day, and that's going really that's strong. Great. So it's cool to see, but what I realized with the communities and in-person stuff was it's, you know, people just wanted a place where they could connect with professionals. In fact, I always thought it would be an interesting meetup, and Ethan Aaron sort of did this, which was the low-key happy hour. So I was like, well, why do we have the presentation? Like, is the presentation at a meetup actually serve anything, or is this a formality?
Right.
And, because kind of think of it as a meetup sandwich, as I called it in one of my articles. It was like, you have the networking here, then you have the presentation, and then you have the networking. But people really just want to do the networking part. So why not just do that? And then Ethan Aaron did that with the low-key happy hour, and it's been successful.
It's been super successful. One of our employees out in Raleigh had the Raleigh low-key data happy hour. Yeah. They would get like 100 people to show up. Like, it was pretty well attended. And I think it's just very... you know, it's refreshing to have an event that doesn't have any vendor pitch or presentation or expectation on what you are going there for. Like, you just go in there to hang out, and then naturally really genuine conversations come out of that. And I think every low-key data happy hour, if you were to look at the data over time, picked up in attendance. Like, none of them dropped. They're all like became their own organic growing events, whether it was in New York, whether it was in Raleigh, whether it was wherever else, which is really cool to see. Like you said, I think people crave that right now. They're looking for less formal ways to interact.
Yeah. Well, especially after COVID, I think that was the case, you know. Totally. I mean, because COVID, I remember my meetup, it went from being, you know, in person and I would say popular, but when COVID happened, obviously, we had to move it online, and that gave that meetup a chance to reach a global audience, right? And so we started having, you know, very, I would say, globally recognized names showing up at the Utah Data Engineering Meetup, which in Utah, that would never have happened if that was an in-person event. So that was super cool to see that. But that's what actually led me to do the podcast, you know, and then get into podcasting. But now that it's back, you know, kind of hybrid, it is interesting to see. Like, Raleigh's got a really strong data community, as far as I can tell. Like, there's a huge contingent of Raleigh people on my Discord. I've been meaning to make it out this year for the happy hour at some point, but we'll see.
I draw some parallels with Raleigh and like even Utah, to be honest. Like, I think they're similar hubs of really talented people who are doing cool things. And there's more startups or early stage companies than one would guess in those areas. People that are just, they're like passionate about their jobs. They're curious to learn more. They're eager to meet up. And so, I do see some parallels there.
For the audience listening to this too, you know, feel free to chime in with questions, but I would say, like, you know, get involved in your communities. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff happening right now, and, you know, a lot of cool people to meet, but if you're looking for, you know, to enhance your career prospects and everything, it really starts and ends with your networks, and you know, the best way to do that is to go meet people. It's strange, it turns out.
Like, actually get out there. Speaking of communities and thought leaders, I'm sure you've met Sonny Rivera. He left a question on LinkedIn right now, and I'm gonna defer this question to you, Joe. But the question is, what do you think about the concept of data readiness over data quality or data models, especially with regards to AI and data?
I don't know what data readiness means. How would you interpret that?
Okay, so if I were to interpret data readiness, I would think that the expectation would be that the data has been prepared properly with documentation, lineage, and quality assumptions in it that make it ready for consumption. But okay, that might not be what other people think, right? Like, people might just say the data is ready for consumption, but who knows how the hell it got there, or who knows what okay. it. Are you looking it up right now? Are you chat GPT?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I am. Well, I'm just Googling it first. I mean, there's some vendors. I mean, it's not a term I use that often. It's been around for a bit. But the state of an organization's data that ensures it's accurate, complete, accessible, and of high quality, enabling informed decision making and supporting data-driven initiatives. Okay. Yeah, I guess if there's a rubric for being data ready, that would be cool. But implicit in all this is sort of what we just talked about, which is
for sure.
Quality and models and stuff. Quality. I think it's baked in, yeah. Right? So, I mean, but it might take it a step further. Like I said, you know, I'm not sure why I don't use the term data readiness, but here we are.
I think the BI vendors use it a bunch. Like, is data readiness there or not? Because that's what they care about if they're going to build a dashboard. But like I've heard it in those capacities.
That would make sense. Sony says focus on use cases, data versus quality or models. I suppose that, it's interesting because I don't know why this would be a controversial topic. Because the antithesis of this would be I am data unready, or I'm not ready with my data yet. And then the consequence of that would be, I couldn't make any vendor happy. Actually, I could, actually, because then they're going to sell me all kinds of stuff. Like, well, we'll make you data ready.
To get the data ready.
So, yes, yeah. And this could be the natural consequence of it. But yeah, I think that's... I never put a term to it, but I suppose that it's one of those things that's always been with you. That's how I would evaluate, when I was, doing more consulting, I guess that's how I would probably evaluate companies is, you know, what would quote data readiness be? I guess we just never thought of it in that nomenclature. Right. So maybe I just have a sheltered life or something. I don't know.
I don't know about that. I would be curious though. So we always do a data trends prediction each year. Mm-hmm. You've probably been on at least one or two of them, but I would love to know what you think are some of the most overhyped trends right now in data. We've talked about different data modeling things. We've talked about different subcultures and regions you've been to. Like, what is some trend in data that you feel like is BS? Or just overhyped. Maybe it's not BS, but it's just too many people are talking about it. It's not as relevant as it should be.
Yeah, I'm always trying to be kind to things, and I don't ever discount things. I just because it's simply a matter of understanding where in the time frame is this happening.
Yeah,
are we in the timeline where this actually? I guess some tech nerds call it the Overton window. Mm-hmm. Are we in the Overton window where this would make sense? This particular right. trend, or are we not? Or are we trying to force this, right? And so, and it should come as no surprise. I think both the most overhyped and underhyped is anything to do with AI. I think that there's that's the softball answer, but I think it's true. There's a lot of hype because a lot of companies, especially big ones, have every incentive to want to hype it. It helps.
Yeah.
Sell compute. It helps sell a lot of things. And but at the end of the day, I've been in this space a long time and been doing ML for a long time. And I think that it's how much machine learning do you see in the world right now? I mean, there's a lot. I mean, if you look at your phone and your computers, it's everywhere. It powers a lot of stuff, but you don't, it just sort of does its thing. And if you use your camera, any camera that we're using to record this right now has a ton of computer vision and other things baked in that are just phenomenally great. But we don't marvel at it. You're not talking about your AI camera, like, oh, look at that. I mean, it's just like, it's a camera. Cool, it's a commodity, right? And so I think that's where it's going to get to. Once I think AI becomes successful is when we stop talking about it.
Yeah, that's fair. Like once it's just it is what it is.
Yeah, don't think about another secular trend that happened, you know, a long time ago was electricity, right? And so that was one of these things where it's almost like AI, where now electricity is everywhere in the world for the most part.
Yeah, you don't even think about it.
It's just something. If you live by candlelight back in the day, you would think hard about it and be like, that's pretty cool.
For sure.
Right. But now you have stuff that'll heat up that mug that you're using right now. I have the same mug. It's a nice mug.
That's right.
Thanks for the swag. It's something we just take for granted now. And in fact, we're, you know, with AI boom, we're trying to figure out where we can get more electricity to power more and more data centers and stuff. So that's kind of where we are. So I think it's just, what I find is interesting about this, and what gives me a reason to say this, is you're starting to see statistics come out where, or at least the numbers are coming out from a lot of the big tech companies that are pushing AI, and they're not seeing the sales.
Yeah.
Right? Because what's happening is...
I think Snowflake shared that in their earnings report. They said that the revenue's not, it's not, there hasn't yet been a considerable amount of revenue growth specifically for AI. They're growing great, right?
They're growing great.
They're crushing it, but it's not from all the AI stuff that they've been pushing yet.
For sure. And the thing is, it's the same with every tech vendor out there. Like, big companies are trying to sell agents, and it's like, cool. They seem really expensive right now, and I'm not sure where I'm going to put these in our company. But the thing is, because I wrote about this when the whole ChatGPT thing first started. It's like, just watch what's going to happen. Everybody's going to try and integrate this into their products, which means at the end of the day, this is an undifferentiated feature. It's no different than if pie charts were suddenly invented for BI tools. And it's like, crap, we got to have pie charts now. Okay, we'll put that in. And now, you know, vendors like, well, check out a new pie chart functionality. Like, this is cool. This is going to change everything about how you run your business. Well, when everybody has it, it's not that interesting, right? But that's where we are. There's not an app that you use that doesn't have some sort of AI feature in it right now. Right. When everything has AI, it's like, it's just undifferentiated. So that's where I see, I've been an AI nerd probably arguably since as a kid. If I look at my bookshelf, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff where I was reading, and it was like, it's not like I don't understand the power of this. I just think that in a lot of cycles, we just tend to overcorrect on expectations, and then, you know, reality comes to where it is, and, you know, you get the real value out of it. So I think that's obviously the most overhyped one, but that's the easy one. I would say that. What do you think is like a challenging one, though, an unintuitive one, where you think, in terms of trends, either we're sleeping on it or it's overhyped?
You know, I'm actually conflicted about AI in general, because sometimes I'm like, this is going to take over the world. And then other times I'm super underwhelmed, just depending on the use case. Now, I'm really confident it'll get there. Like, there are certain scenarios where it does blow me away, but there are other ones where I'm not. And I am very curious to see how that evolves over time and in what time frame. So I don't know if you've had similar experiences. Like, is there anything that's really blown you away recently when it comes to AI related things that you've seen?
I think just the like the computer use type stuff, I think, is really awesome. And I'm curious to see where that goes. I think it's still super early days for this technology. But I think where I'm most curious is what do workflows look like that we can't even envision right now, because we're people and we're trying to, I think, superimpose the way we work onto workflows that might perform a lot better, and that's, I think that's the big question I've been thinking about, is like, what is a true AI native workflow look like, where the AI is actually maybe coming up with a workflow and doing it on its own. You're right. So you can call it agents, call it whatever you want. But I think that's the stuff I think a lot about, because we're going to live in this world where it's sort of the duality of, you know, humans and machines. But I think truly this becomes the duality when machines are just operating in a way where humans just don't understand what it does. It just does its thing. I mean, computers sort of behave this way anyway right now. But then what does it mean to have things acting autonomously as agents? And agents in the true sense, too, of like how it was defined, you know, maybe in Peter Norvig and Stuart Russell's AI book, which was something that perceives something in its environment and then takes action on it, right? But in an autonomous way. Like, that's, I think, how I would look at it, this sort of thing. But it's a fascinating world we're getting into. you know, I always think about what the impact is on, you know, the field and the careers of people. And I'm sure everyone does at this point. It's, you know, one of the most existential things.
Have you seen companies, people get impacted by it? Like talking to different businesses or seen it in a way that's either positive or negative for organizations or just people in general?
I mean, I think it positively impacts people who know what they're doing, say like engineers who are writing code. It's or putting together systems. It's been awesome, right? But you gotta know like what the culture for
something like that.
Yeah, it's been great. Yeah. I don't know anyone who's saying, well, I might ignore this and go back to the old ways of doing stuff.
Yeah.
There are a few, of course, but I think, you know, it's those are either they're like the 10x engineer who really is better than AI, and I know a few of them
for sure. I know a few of them too.
Right?
Yeah, they'll be resistant to it. They'll be a little bit reluctant to embrace it because they are so smart. But yeah. I would think eventually they'll embrace it just because it's going to become so embedded in everything that we do.
For sure. I mean, I was doing something this weekend, writing code. And I was using a Copilot. I'm kind of a boomer when it comes to that because Copilot's pretty old. Yeah, but I found myself, you know, I had to do pretty much 90% of the rewrite. I kept prompting it over and over. And I was like, this looks progressively worse. Like, why are you doing this? So I was like, screw it, I'll just go back. But I mean, but that also, I think, indicated that I knew what I was doing. And not just taking the code at face value, right? But I think increasingly that's going to be one of the skill sets that, you know, hopefully we're kind of at a juncture right now where you can either go into one direction where you're learning the craft of coding and learning at a site, you know,
vibe coding,
working
aside you're a big vibe coder,
vibe coding.
Yeah.
Well, vibe coding would be the other direction where you just sort of like, just accept the LLM. You just kind of go with it. Like it's vibes. Yeah. I shudder to think, I mean, I was writing about, I actually gave a talk about this at Winter Data Conference where, it was right as the term vibe coding had come out, so it wasn't in my lexicon, but I referred to it as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch of AI and code slop. And what I think will happen is you're going to have so much
of this.
Yeah, it was. There's a few write-ups on it. It's one of the talks where I just sort of just went up and I there was a talk I was going to give, and then I was like, I don't want to give that talk. So I just like ditched the slides and everything and just kind of improvised. But it ended up being a fun rant. But the whole notion is, you know, we have this ability right now to create really awesome products, software products, like, you know, in record time. But it's like, the consequence of not knowing what you're doing, you're going to like pump out just endless amounts of crappy code and crappy systems and crappy architecture. And then the whole thing is disposable, right? So this comes back to the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is like, that's a reflection of our disposable consumerist culture where we just throw endless amounts of garbage into the ocean. You know, and that's, I think this is sort of the future we're looking at if it's unattended with, you know, data and everything else that we work hard to, as an industry to take care of. So data readiness, I would say, is an interesting concept in light of this. You know, you have this Dunning-Kruger effect of, you know, thinking you're ready. But what I also foresee happening is if this goes unattended, you, so all these companies are talking about how they're going to be laying off engineers soon. I'm like, you know, go for it. Let go of them all and just have AI write all the code and then rehire them in a couple of years, come and fix all the mess that was created. So, you know, it's
seems. Seems like a horrible approach. I mean, you've seen that happen in a lot of different companies. I think the engineers would be the last ones you would feel would get impacted by AI, right? Like you're seeing different support AI use cases where people are like less focused on, you know, phone centers, for example, and like different workflows based on certain questions, which the jury's still out. I think we've both been on calls where you're trying to get a human on the line and it just pisses you off that it takes so long.
Oh my God.
So I don't know how that's going to come to fruition. Yeah.
Or even worse, you're on the website cause you can't call anybody at the company. And then you're like, you know, on the talking to a chat bot.
Yep.
And it's like, we can't help you.
Yeah. We'll
send you to another chat bot.
Like, So
I had that the other day. Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's, Anyway, it's interesting. So I started rereading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance last night. It was like, it's written in 1974, and I just wanted to go back to a time. But it talks about the role of technology and how people were, frustrated with technology back then. But as like, I want to go back to a simpler time and just understand what people were thinking back then. So anyway, what were you saying?
I mean, there's been so much innovation. I was talking to somebody when I was walking this weekend around, like, just in the past, my lifetime, going through the digital era, mobile era, AI, internet, like all those things have happened throughout the past 20 years, basically. And this is a really big platform shift. Like, it's happening. So I'm curious, because we've got a few minutes left.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about data modeling, book coming out. I guess when you think about data trends, since you don't want to talk about any overhyped trends, what do you think, like, what data trends do you think companies and teams should care about right now?
It's interesting. I was talking a few months ago with Bill Inman about this.
Nice.
And he was, he's been a really good friend and mentor, but we're discussing basically the camps of like the technologists and the fundamentalists. And the fundamentalists are those who believe in, learning the practices first, learning a craft, and then applying technology to it. The other opposite, the other end is like technologists, just, it's all about technology. It's great. Maybe don't care about the fundamentals and so forth. I kind of sit somewhere in between, I guess. Like, I do like to nerd out in tech, but I think fundamentals are important. And so what's interesting on this is that you learn to see sort of the pendulum and the arc in which our industry
constantly.
Yeah. And the COVID era was definitely, I would say, the technologist, time that was that's where it was. Right. But I think, just given everything that's been happening, you're seeing a swing back to the fundamentals. And so that's interesting. For a lot of reasons, really, AI has presented an opportunity for companies to, hopefully finally get their data house in order. That's discussions I see around the world. Part of this is driven by the sense that, and the recognition that, data-centric AI is a real thing. Like, your models are only as good as your data. But it's also driven in part, especially in Europe, by regulatory concerns, right? So the AI Act means that data governance and management, which was traditionally one of these like extremely unsexy topics. Like,
totally,
you could drive like a wood paneled station wagon and probably have more sex appeal than data governance, with like your toupee and stuff on. But this is changing. And
it's becoming way more popular. I mean, I was at the Gartner conference last week, or was it 2 weeks ago? I can't remember exactly. I mean, they always talked about governance. Like, Gartner's always been like big on that, but it's kind of broken that ceiling, I would say. And it's now becoming a much more common topic across just general people and data practitioners, versus it being like strictly this enterprise centric, like, almost pie in the sky effort and initiative that was disjointed from the data team.
Right.
Now it's like actually something that executives care about, data teams care about, and data governance and data stewards care about as well. Yeah. Instead of it feeling like it was a bottleneck or something that people were resistant towards.
Yeah. And part of it is just how it's framed, right? I think governance is typically like, well, cool, let's hire the cops.
It's like, oh, you want us to create laws? Like, I don't want to slow down. We're already behind schedule. Like, I don't want to deal with more rules that I have to abide to. So,
but it's changing though. So it's
the stakes are way higher. Now the stakes are just
stakes
way higher.
Yeah. So I was when I was flying over to Europe, I watched there's a documentary on Yacht Rock. I don't know if you've seen that one. So
I haven't seen the documentary, but I know there's like Spotify playlists and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah. Yacht Rock is a term actually invented in 2005 by some people who made a YouTube video of all these, 1970s smooth rock artists, like Doobie Brothers and Steely Dan and stuff. But it reminds me of that, where these people back in the 70s, these great artists made some, music, and then it sort of just like went away. And it was only rediscovered as a satire.
Our VP of engineering listens to it all the time. He's like, that's his favorite Spotify playlist.
Oh my God. That's vibe coding for sure.
That's a vibe coder right there.
But it reminds me of the trends that you see where something is just like, it's, you know, cause I remember growing up on these kind of, these songs. I mean, I'm old. I mean, I remember when these were new albums actually.
Record.
I still have some probably over there actually. But it was like, these were like new albums and now, you know, they were uncool for decades and they resurrected, but this is like what you see with trends. Data governance is pretty much like yacht rock in a lot of ways, where this was hits that your dad listened to, you know, when he's probably, you know, having a doobie or something. And now it's cool. Now your kids listen to it. Your VP of engineering listens to it. This is how it is.
I know you're probably familiar with Rick Roll.
Oh yeah.
That was like now that's become a hit. Like I was at the grocery store, but like at some restaurant or like a coffee shop and that song's playing. Like it's
playing Risk Acid at the coffee shop.
We're over on time. No worries. I just want to say happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. Thank you, Joe.
Wear your green.
I'm looking forward to seeing you. So maybe Data Council or Snowflake Summit, definitely one of those two.
For sure.
And I'm really excited to see the book get published, hopefully by this summer. And I'll definitely be purchasing a copy. Maybe we'll do another session here to talk about it.
Love to.
Like we did last time.
Love to.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks.
Good seeing you again.
Thanks, man. Later.
All right.